Welcome to the Human Beat. We're talking today with Norma Hernandez, who is the Executive Director of the Lower Columbia Hispanic Council. Norma, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
If you don't mind, I'd like to start out by finding out a little bit more about you, about your journey here. Where did you come from, and how did you come to be here on the Lower Columbia?
Oh my goodness, that is a long journey and a fun one it
I
is,
want to
too.
Hear it.
Yes, I was born and raised in Puerto Rico. You know, that Puerto Rico is a territory of the United States. So I was very lucky to was being born under being an American citizen. So my life has been a little bit easier on that regard. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to prove anything, apply for anything. So we grew up very much, very multicultural in Puerto Rico. For me, it's very funny when people said, I don't want to press two if it's Spanish or one if it's English, but that's how I grew up. Mm-hmm. Because in Puerto Rico, everything was bilingual. Mm-hmm. So you had to pick. Since I was born in 1961, I had to pick which language I wanted to do something. So it's like, oh, come on, that's very old. That's not known. It's okay. And I lived there until I was 21. Then I moved to New York City, of course, like every good Puerto Rican should do.
I've seen West Side Story, of course.
Well, of course. You know that the biggest Puerto Rican town is New York. You know that, right? So I moved to New York like every Puerto Rican should. I lived there for 5 years, and I loved it. I thought it was my university of life. That's what I learned, a lot of the things that I think I still apply today in my life. And mm-hmm. It was a fun time. Highly recommended that everybody should live in New York in their early 20s. And after that, I moved to Boston. My sister was living there with her family, and I was there for 15 years. And I consider Boston, that's home. For me, Boston is really home. It's an adult life, and it was just a beautiful city that it was, for me, in a certain way, was more diverse than New York. Mm-hmm. You know, you have these awesome colleges and universities, and you have all these students from around the world, and it's no other place to have good food than Boston. It's like, oh my God, it's just every different dish is so good. So
if the Red Sox play the Yankees, where are you?
I'm Red Sox all the way.
Okay, just want to get that clear.
No, get that very clear. I'm one of those that do not even smile when I see the word New York Yankees. It's like, no, I'm a Red Sox, and to the end, I am just, it's no place like Fenway.
Right.
I think every person should also visit Fenway Park.
Yeah.
I think all the baseball parks, you can have the new ones. You know, I have been to Seattle to see the Mariners play. And I said, what a beautiful park. What an awesome place with no heart.
Yeah.
And like, you need a couple of people here that are rowdy, ordinary, and it will be all fun. Then it will be. But I saw people there just applauding a home run. And I'm like, oh, come on, where are your screams? Where is your hate for the umpires? No.
Well,
Fenway, it is.
I grew up in Chicago watching the Chicago Cubs at Wrigley mm-hmm. Field. And, of course, they haven't won since before I was born. So it takes a lot of dedication, but it's the same thing.
It's the same thing. It's like, oh, come on, guys, let's put some heart into it.
So you love New York. You love Boston.
I love Boston,
and
yes.
And here you are on the other coast.
I am. I have some friends. I used to work in one of my jobs that I had in Boston was with the New England Aquarium. And I worked with them for 6 years. And I think I had most of my friends come out of the New England Aquarium, actually, in Boston. And a couple that they did not used to be a couple when we all worked together. They was a marine biologist that he was an educator. And one of my friends from human resources, they actually, after being friends, became a couple, got married, and they were living in Florida. And he got a job with the fisheries department here in OSU.
Uh-huh.
So they moved here in September 2002. And I called them and I said, I should visit you around December. And they say, why? It's raining. It's ugly. Why do you want to come to Astoria? I said, I don't know. It's going to be 5 degrees in Boston. If it's funny. Just give me a number. If it's in the 40s, that's a heat wave for me. So I came and visited them. I called my sister in Puerto Rico, Hilda, and I said, you want to go to Astoria, Oregon? And she says, where the hell is that? I said, I don't know either. I said, let's go. And we came. We were here for over 2 weeks in December. We saw the sun twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I still thought it was the coolest place that I had lived.
Absolutely.
Honestly, I thought it was a mix between Twin Peaks and Northern Exposure.
It is.
That was my idea and my explanation. I'm like, oh, I see what this is, you know? And I discovered the Grey Pie. So I'm like, I went to a party, a Christmas party, one of my friend, and I actually met the owners of an oyster company in Bay Center, Washington, Goose Point Oysters. And I'm talking how much I like this area and how cool it was. And they actually offered me a job. And they say, you know, we have all these Latino employees and we have no one in management that speaks Spanish. How would you like a job? So I went and actually interviewed with them on my vacation. I spent like 3 hours at the cannery. And this is what we did, Roger. My sister and I went, and I would send my sister to walk around the cannery so she can eavesdrop on the employees talking to see how happy they were. If they were happy, and then I thought it was a good place to work. So that's how we played
that's
it. While
that's very smart.
That's what we did. So while I interviewed, she just walked the whole plant and the whole cannery and talked to the employees. And then we discussed in our way to Seattle, okay, how was it? And she said, actually, everybody's very happy there. So I think it will be a good place. I left on January 3rd with that job offer. And I moved back on February 6th.
And we're,
it only took me a month to say, I'm out.
We're glad to have you.
Oh, thank you.
When you came, you were working for the cannery. What caused the switch from that then to your current job as the executive director of the Lower Columbia Hispanic Council?
Well, actually what happened there was, this is when I started to notice that my job, it was more than being an office manager and more than to be a human resource person. I needed to help these guys with so many things.
Yeah.
I even helped them to do divorce papers, something that I had never done in my life. And doctors and all these other little things, and talking to them about taxes. Why do you have so many dependents? Do you know this is not good? It's just really, it became like little by little, it was becoming into like just helping. I'm like, I wonder what's going on. And I became a volunteer with the Hispanic Council. At the time, they didn't have a paid employee. It was just a group of volunteers, you know, that was partly funded by the Montes family that they have moved out of here, by Patricia Morrissey, Fernando Rodriguez, Eileen Purcell. It was all this great group of people, and I just joined them. Not completely official. I didn't want to be a board member. I had done that stuff in Boston, and I was a little burned out from it, but I was a volunteer with them. And they applied for several grants, including Oregon Community Foundation and also the Meyer Memorial Grant Trust. And they received this to get somebody to work full time. At that moment, I already changed jobs. I had left the oyster company. 4 years traveling 1 hour each way did me in. I was just like, I was tired of traveling to Bay Center every day, especially in the winter. It was horrible. So I wanted to get something closer to home. And I became involved with their health department. And I became a family support worker for the great program named Healthy Start. And I was a bilingual support worker, a job that I still hold on with just the most love, because you could see how you could help people from the beginning. You could see what education and it is really with little kids. And we take them from birth until they were five. And it was a great program, but the program closed at the time in 2008. So I was without a job. And at that same time, they are offering this job with the Hispanic Council, and they are telling me, you know, apply, apply. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I want to work for my friends. You guys are my friends, but you guys are the board. And I don't know what that's going to be. So it took me a little bit of really wrestling that in my head. But I applied, and I was cocky. I knew I could do that job. It's like, I know.
Well, you'd
that
already
would
been
be
doing it in a way.
In a way. So I was just like, I don't know who you have here, but I know what I could do with this. And they believed in me, so I have to be very thankful that they accepted that I could do it.
You, before we started to record, you started to tell me kind of an interesting story about how you were perceived or received before you were the executive director of the council and afterwards. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yeah. When I came here, I have always been very much welcome. I never had a situation and never had a strange look, never any dis. like we will say in the urban ways, no dissing was towards me. Mm-hmm. It was very welcoming and warm. Mm-hmm. When I became the director of the Lower Columbia Hispanic Council, I noticed a little bit of a change from certain people. Not everybody, but you could see people started to be a little bit more cautious. I think it was just what I represented. They forgot who I was, and they thought I was representing something that was either maybe in their heads or in their minds or in their belief illegal or wrong or immoral. And I could see how things change a bit.
Sure.
It's like people is like, this is when I realize education needs to be out there. I need to talk to whomever stand next to me for 2 seconds and tell them what I really do. Mm-hmm. Because it's like people believe that we're doing something else. And I think they thought that I was trying to support illegal immigration or support illegal acts. And that's not what we are all about.
Right.
We are about education, cultural awareness, and just guiding people what to do when will you move to a new place. We all move somewhere and we don't know how to behave. And it's so different culturally and how to live here and how to live in Latino countries that this is what we do. We just help them.
Well, you've heard, I know, all of the slurs against Hispanics. And I'm just curious, you know, Hispanics, they should wait their turn like everyone else. They're sneaking into the country. Why don't they just learn English? They're taking our jobs. They're lazy and they live off my taxes. How do you respond to that stuff?
I usually start when the first one. Okay, I have to get in line. Well, me personally, I didn't have to get in
you
line.
You were in line.
I was in line, and that's what I always said. And like I said before, here you have a territory of the United States that our language is Spanish. So we have to take out of our minds that mentality that for you to be an American, you have to speak English. No. United States have territories that their language is not English. So we have to start being a little bit more open-minded. When they say they're taking my job, I usually respond, oh, I didn't know you want to go and pick strawberries. Or I didn't know you wanted to go and shuck oysters. I didn't know that your goal in life was to go and fillet fish.
Right.
I said, that's it? Is that what, you know, that's the job? I said, I don't really see any Latino teachers, doctors, policemen. I wish I will see them.
We're
working towards that.
And it will get there.
One of the other things that people say, they live in off my taxes. Mm-hmm. I said, Latinos could not take unemployment, cannot receive any kind of federal money, like what we'll call welfare, like the cash assistance from the DHS. I said, they cannot receive those.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when people have the mentality that they are living off their taxes. Well, that is not the truth. But the second part of that is Latinos declare taxes.
Okay, yeah.
And every time I say they pay taxes, somebody says, oh, yeah, whatever is taken out of their checks. I say, you're not listening to me. I'm saying declare. Declare is doing a 1040 like you and me. Declare is doing Form 40 from Oregon. And they say, no, how can they do that if they're not legal citizens? And that's when they say, now that's the education part. Yes, they obtain an ITIN, Individual Tax Identification Number.
And that's something your organization
helps with. My organization helps with. That's what we really try to every single one that we know and meet, that it's one of our main things. You got to declare, because we believe the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They need to come if you're going to work, but you also are responsible. You have fiscal responsibility with this country and with the state. So we teach that.
Mm-hmm.
You need to teach. I said, well, I'm sorry. This is not like our countries.
Yeah.
I said, we need to do this. Your kids are going to go to school. You're going to be driving on the highways. You need to do this.
Right.
So they are, paying their taxes, they declaring. The only thing they don't have maybe is that legal resident card or that visa. And some of them do.
Mm-hmm.
People said, oh, how come, you know, my family came and they came legally. Usually when people talk about my family coming, my ancestors, I ask, what year was that?
Mm-hmm.
It was no immigration law
mm-hmm.
between May 26, 1924. it was no immigration. So every time somebody said, oh, my family came in 1910, my family even came on 1920, I said, well, you were lucky.
Yeah, my father came in 1908. So
yeah, yeah, it was no immigration law.
We're all immigrants. I mean, yeah, that's the we are.
That's the fun thing that is like people don't remember that little part. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I used to talk to the guys at the Oyster Company, that's when it really reflected to me one time talking to them. And they said, Norman, what I make here in 1 hour, that was a week's worth.
Right.
I said, you know, when you compared a 1 hour of your living, opening oysters, to thinking that you earned that a whole week to feed your family, where does it come? Where is the compassion? Where is when we, that we are such good human beings, or so we declare, and we forget about that empathy? Mm-hmm. We have no empathy. We have no sympathy. Mm-hmm. We think we work hard for this, we earn it. Okay, that's good. And you should enjoy that. But don't forget about your neighbor. Mm-hmm. Don't forget about the other ones around you. Because just because you did it doesn't mean that they don't want to do it. Maybe they can. They don't have the ability. Mm-hmm. They want to learn English. But Roger, if somebody tells me, I'll teach you English today at 4 o'clock for free, but then my employer says, I can have you work 3 hours overtime from 2 to 6, guess what? Yeah. I'm going to go and work the overtime because that's why I came here.
I think there are two things that you are doing on the Hispanic Council, and one of them is providing services for people who need services, helping them learn the ways of this country or the ways of this region, making sure they get done the things they need to get done, and so on. But the other one is working on attitudes.
Yes.
On both sides of the fence.
On both sides.
Is that a fair characterization?
That is. That is very fair. Yeah, that is one of my... our mission is the integration. Mm-hmm. That is what we need to work on, and that's what we want to work on. Our goals is like, okay, let's learn from each other's culture. Let's combine this. Let's learn about what is right and what is not. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, in the last couple of years, I believe that I have been successful mm-hmm. with the majority of the community. Mm-hmm. I believe that the leaders of the coast have been very open and supportive from mayors, city managers, and police department has been excellent, which is just been trying to say, okay, what do you need? I said, use me. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I always try to tell non-Latino groups. Use me. Mm-hmm. Call me. Ask the question. Don't believe that it's going to be the wrong question. The wrong question is the one that you're not going to ask and might make the wrong move. Mm-hmm. I said, let's talk about it. And if it makes me uncomfortable, I'm going to say, wow, that makes me uncomfortable. We got to get that. So that means something. We got to look for that answer. But up to now, nothing has made me uncomfortable because it's all what is expected. I think you remember last year that I had this very negative experience at the county fair.
Fairgrounds, yes.
And I really, really was in a conundrum this year to be there or not.
Well, and not everyone may know what happened, so maybe you can fill us
in. Oh, last year when I went to it was the first time that the Hispanic Council had a booth at the county fairgrounds, and we had several very negative incidents. People told me to go back home. Mm-hmm. And like I told you before, home is Boston. So I could say no, it snows there. And I took it as a joke. But I had several very serious arguments mm-hmm. that it took everything that I do not have by being a Latina. And it took everything to keep it calm mm-hmm. and to understand, not let the passion take over.
It made you angry.
Oh, I was livid.
Yeah.
I was so livid and hurt because I kept saying, this could not be the same place that I moved 7 years ago because people were so welcoming and nice to me.
But people keep repeating to you that you are less, that you are not.
Yeah, I was stealing from the United States, that I have... How dare me being helping and abiding like illegal citizens. It was just, they went on and on and on. And it was just tough. Yeah. I had people that would look at my sign and just sneer and make faces. What are you doing here? It was just like, I'm saying, like, really?
Yeah.
This is 2010. I kept thinking, I said, this is Astoria. I know it's going to be a couple of people that don't like us, but this is hostile. It was very hostile environment. And I had a couple of booths around me that people were ready to jump in. And when they saw they were trying to jump in, I would say no, because this is going to make it worse. Right. I have to make it a one-on-one. Right. The last thing that I need, somebody say, and she gang up on me.
Yeah.
You know, I said, no, please. And so people several times tried to interview. I'm like, no, it have to be one-on-one. I said, I cannot use anybody for this. And so it really left a very sour taste in my mouth. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm not taking anything from anybody. As an organization, as a female, as a citizen, I said, I am helping. How dare you, you know, accuse me of doing illegal things? Or say, how I took it very, very personal. I had to learn this year to really not take it personal also. That is something that it have to do with ignorance. And I'm not saying ignorance is when you have not been exposed to something.
Right.
I'm not saying that people are ignorant here. No. It's the ignorance about a culture or the ignorance about a concept or about a word. Or it could be that when you don't know, so I could not be mad.
Yeah.
I could not be angry if you have never been exposed to the Puerto Rican food, and then I come and I offer you a blood sausage,
right.
You know, and you're going to be like, excuse me, get that away from me. I have to understand, you never had it before.
Unless you're Scottish.
Unless you're Scottish. But, you know, it was just those things that I had to go back and see, where did I fail that I took it so personal?
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, Norma, you can't do this. They have never been exposed to this big influx. Yes, and they might be scared. They might think that people will take from them.
Right.
Because that's also what people make them believe. People believe that if you accept other people's in your life, they're going to take over.
Well, depending on who you're listening to, that's what
exactly.
You certainly can hear.
That's what you're going to hear. So I had to deal with that. But when I went this year, and after a lot of soul searching, okay, I told my board, we're going to do it. And they said, "It's you know, you have the last word. Whatever you do, we're going to support you." I said, we'll do it. And I kept thinking, like, they say, now you're going to do anything? I said, no. I actually only had information. I didn't want to be in anybody's face. I wanted to be just there. And it was awesome experience. Mm-hmm. People kept stopping. People kept saying, how is it going this year? If you need help, let me know. I'm over there. And it was, people would look at the sign and looked at me and smile and said, hola.
That's great.
So I thought it was like, huh, what a difference a year make. Mm-hmm. And maybe I was criticized for voicing it up and for saying that this had happened. But I think it was the right thing to do because it brought awareness.
And I think most people in the community were probably embarrassed to hear about what had happened to you that first year, and it's mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh, this is not what we want. You know,
exactly.
The people who've been here longer want for our communities. So.
Yeah, and that's the only thing. It was just like, really? You know, this is, you liked me 3 years ago when I had nothing to do with the Hispanic Council, but you don't like me now because mm-hmm. I'm the director of the Hispanic Council, and, you know, those conversations happen. But it turned out to be wonderful this year.
Well, and I think what you said is absolutely true. The exposure makes the difference.
Exposure.
And the more exposure there is, the more we understand each other. And, you know, before moving here many years ago, I did live in California, and it's the Hispanic experience there is much older. And it gets to the point where, truly, you're not aware of somebody being Hispanic or non-Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Joe, or it's just Sally, or just
yeah.
whoever it is. And someone may say, oh, he or she is Hispanic, and you think, oh yeah, their last name is Rodriguez.
Yeah.
I guess they are.
Okay.
But it's not front of mind anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just not part of the consciousness anymore.
Yeah.
And
unless it's me, that I have a thicker accent now. And
tell us about that, because you mentioned that your accent has kind of gone the other way.
What's, oh my goodness, this is horrible. It's my family and my friends from the East Coast make so much fun of me. You know, I've been living almost 30 years in the United States, and I really didn't have a thick accent. I had sort of a, you could tell the Latino accent, but it was very down and it was very, you could not really. But now, since I moved here and I was working with Latinos at the Oyster Company and then working with Latinos at the health department and working, and now that I speak Spanish all day long, my accent is just like, you can actually, it's so thick that I think you need like an ice pick or something. It's horrible. Sometimes I get home and my partner Silas, he is a non-Latino, he's Anglo. And sometimes I just get home and he just stares at me with this blank, blank stare. He's like, what are you saying? Do you even know what language you're speaking? He's like, no, I have no clue what you're talking about. And it's just because my accent has gotten so bad. And I just went back to Boston in June for a graduation of one of my nieces. And I'm talking to certain people in English. And he says, Norman, you know, you have more of an accent now. Is that like an Oregon? Of course, because they're not going to see Oregon. Is that like an Oregon thing? Actually, no, it's not an Oregon thing. It's just because I work with Latinos all day long. And now it's just I speak Spanish all day.
Well, as we wrap up here, let me hand you the magic wand. And you've got the magic wand, and if there are a couple of things that you could make happen or you could change, what would those things be? What are the things that you're kind of the closest to your heart that you're working on?
Immigration reform. Honestly, immigration reform.
Mm-hmm. And how would you like to see that come about? What would that look like to you?
For me, what that would look like, I think it would be a win-win situation for everybody. Mm-hmm. Something that people need to understand, most of Latinos that are living here, is not like they want American citizenship. They want legal residency, which is a whole different thing. But I think immigration reform is something that I have written to Obama several times. I'm one of those that writes to the White House. So you got to do something with this. Mm-hmm. People keep ignoring it. They keep just like, is this valuable that nobody wants like to kill it? Right. You know, they just keep bouncing it back and forth. Somebody just killed it. Come on, somebody have to do that. Mm-hmm. And nobody is. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that for me, honestly, will be everybody wins. That will be my number one from that magic wand. Mm-hmm. The one that I think it should be even before that, because it's more attainable in my eyes, it will be to return the licenses, the driving licenses to the Oregon driver's license.
Now, they took away licenses from?
From everybody that it was not a legal citizen.
Okay.
So that happens 2 years ago. People that needed to renew, now they don't have.
Right.
So they usually go to Washington. Mm-hmm. But it is a catch-22. You could not be an Oregon resident with a Washington license. That's an illegal thing.
Right.
But you still need a license to drive if you work here. So it's just a mess. It's really a mess that it was just one of the most dumb things that happened. But I think it happened because people were forced to. I think senators and our government was forced to do it by the federal mandate in a way. It's like, it's right. That or lose all this money. Right. So I can understand. I'm not saying they are to blame. I could understand. What I do believe, it could be changed. Mm-hmm. It is ways that we can really turn that around and making it a win-win for somebody that is not documented and for the government. Everybody will get their money and taxes will be filed.
Is there something that we've forgotten to cover that I forgot to ask you about that you'd like to talk about?
That I love Astoria, Roger. And even if I defend for Latinos, even this is the place that I picked to live. Mm-hmm. I did not end up here because I ended up here because I wanted to live here. And people need to know that I love Astoria as much as if I would have come with Lewis and Clark. That it doesn't matter where you come from. And you can love a place that is wonderful. And I have to say, when I have no family here, I have no relatives, I have just my partner. Mm-hmm. And when you have nobody, but then you feel the love of a town. Mm-hmm. And that's what's keeping me here. And I still want to fight it because I want Astoria to love the rest of us as much as I love Astoria.
Norma Hernandez, the executive director of the Lower Columbia Hispanic Council. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Roger. It was a pleasure. Encantada.